Good morning, everyone. We welcome you to our Sunday morning roundtable discussion. Today is August 12th, 2018, and we will begin today with our prayer from Florence, please. Thank you.
This is from Science, Christian Science versus Pantheism, page 15. May our Father, Mother God, who in times past have spread for us a table in the wilderness and in the midst of our enemies, establish us in the most holy faith, plant our feet firmly on truth, the rock of Christ, the substance of things hoped for, and fill us with the life and understanding of God and goodwill towards men. Mary Baker Eddy.
Beautiful, thank you. And miscellaneous writings. Mary Baker Eddy. We today in this classroom are enough to convert the world if we are of one mind, for then the whole world will feel the influence of this mind, as when the earth was without form, and mind spake, and form appeared. Morning, our subject is soul. The golden text is Psalm 139. I will praise thee, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Marvelous are thy works, and that my soul knoweth right well. Any comments on that? Barbara wrote to it. Is she here this morning?
No.
Okay. Ellen, go ahead.
I thought what Barbara wrote had something in it that was quite significant when she was quoting, and that my soul, she put in parentheses, spiritual sense. So it's right well. And I think this really is a statement of significant metaphysical importance, that the only way we can know how marvelous God's works are is through our spiritual sense. If we believe what our material senses show us or tell us, we're going to think that some of what God made is beautiful, but that some of what God made is really ugly or evil or destructive or painful. And it's only, you know, you hear a lot of people will complain about the evil in the world, and then they'll ask, why does God allow that? Well, if you believe your material senses, life is one big confusing, there's no good answer to anything. It is our spiritual sense only that can discern, that can recognize. No, God didn't make evil. It is unreal. It is an illusion. What God made is wonderful. And that's the only thing that's real. That's why we have to cultivate our spiritual sense, learn to trust it, and rely on it 100% of the time.
This is a beautiful lesson, and Amanda wrote it. Very well crafted and thought out. It's truly, as the beautiful hymn we have, from sense to soul, our pathway lies before us. And this is the theme, really, from the belief of the senses and all the terrible things it tells you, the Adam dream, to what is really true and real. And Royce also wrote in the forum a beautiful hymn too. Royce, there, Royce, do you want to read it or not?
Yes, I do. I have it right here. Oh, may we be still and seek Him, seek with consecration whole, listening thus to hear the message, far from sense and hid in soul. He hath promised we shall find Him. Love divine its promise keeps. God is watching with the watchful, God is life that never sleeps. If we pray to him in secret, lift to him the heart's desire, we shall find our earthly longings all made pure by love's pure fire. Then, upon the precious metal, God's own image will appear, faithfully to him reflected, one with him forever near.
Thank you.
And not surprising, it was our first hymn today, so.
Oh, my goodness.
Wonderful. And speaking him with consecration, being still, and listening to hear the message. And Linda, you wrote about listening. What did you write? Or actually, yeah, tell us what you wrote, and then you can give us that beautiful last paragraph by Mrs. Eddy.
Well, I was just writing about all the lessons we're getting here to listen to God, and then the wonderful testimony last week about listening to God, and the man who also the testimony of the man who went out of the boat because he listened to God, and the importance of it that while they talked to God, they had to be listening, and that's what struck me, how important listening was. And then I can read what Mrs. Eddy wrote from Miss Laney.
Quote,
"Today, if ye would hear his voice, listen to his word, and serve no other gods, then the divine principle of good that we call God will be found in ever-present help in all things, and Christian Science will be understood." End quote.
Beautiful. What a thing. You see how important the listening is. Listening leads to understanding. Because we do, we all get these divine messages when we are still and seeking him, as that hymn says. It comes to us just as a divine impulsion, as it came to Tom that day when he took his boat out and saved a man's life. He just heard that voice. And so what are ways that God speaks to you?
Well, I know for me, God is always giving me new ways to do my work, better ways to act in the world. I know, you know, going around this week thinking I am fearfully and wonderfully made, I'm thinking, well, everyone else is too, so I better not give anybody any grief or anything. It's certainly not my right. So.
Anybody else?
I think directly, I mean, often when you're really still, you hear the direction. I hear, and I'm sure everybody else does, it's like do this or don't do this. If you're on the road, for example, I'm sure other testimonies have cited that. It's go this direction or don't go this direction. It's a sense, a peaceful sense that comes, God communicating with us.
Thank you.
Working on the church publications, I often have what I call my little chats with God. And I'll ask him, is this right? Is this the way you want this? And like you said, you just be peaceful and be quiet. And you get the answer. And you know what's the right order to put things. And it's really wonderful.
Thank you. I know Elsie's always talking. She's always talking to God in conversations. Sometimes that makes him more real if you actually feel like you're speaking. But make sure you do plenty of listening. And it does. To me, it just comes. It comes seemingly out of nowhere. I get ideas. I don't feel I've conjured up anything.
Yeah, for me, it happened that I found a job 10 minutes footway away, and I have looked for jobs for all over Hamburg, outside the other side, and all around. I would go, I was ready to travel really an hour or two just to have my job. And now I found something more or less around the corner on the way to the train station, and it's about an hour to do, but low level job, packing for an online shop. But it's okay. I mean, the money is okay, and the especially people wouldn't want to do that. But well, for me, it's the right time to do this kind of job now. And this, I see a parallel to this God found already placed for me.
Oh, thank you, Ud.
Yeah.
Hi. This is Michael. I read that Mrs. Eddy would sometimes open up her book. She'd ask a question and then open up her Bible and get an answer. Just randomly open it up, and she would get an answer to what she was asking. And Herbert Eustace, he brings up that God will speak to you in the language that you are open to. And that might be something you hear on the radio, or something you hear on something, a comment that somebody makes, or something you read, or something you see. It doesn't even really matter how it comes to you. It just, it will come in the way that you are open to or receptive to.
Yes, thank you, Michael. It can come in many different ways. And if you're seeking his voice, again, as that hymn says, you will hear it, whether it just comes in a friend or a beautiful sunset. Nature can speak to us. God can tell us. It was interesting the other day. There was a spider in the house, and I was trying to get it outside. It was a big black one, and I had it in a tissue. It kept falling out. I kept trying to gently get it back up and take it outside. But toward the end, that big black spider, I didn't even recognize it. It rolled up into this little tiny gray ball, and I did take it out, and I prayed it was okay. But I thought, you know, it had this defense mechanism in it to preserve itself, I guess, maybe even to disguise itself. But I thought in working with people sometimes when they get extremely fearful, that's what happens to them. They almost lose their God-given identity, rolling up in a little ball of trying to protect what they think is their personality or their whatever, and it isn't, almost to the point of being disguised from the real man of God, the real man that God has made. So never be fooled by false appearances, but always know that right there, where something perhaps seems all rolled up in a little ball and where you almost feel you can't reach that person, is that child of God. You can talk directly to that child of God and know that that love will open him up and unfold him again to what God has truly made. But so anyway, that was, I felt a message from God to me with that little spider. And actually, I never thought I'd cry over a spider, but it almost brought me to tears to see that little spider curl up like that. So God has many lessons for us if we're listening and seeing them everywhere.
A lot of times we think we've lost something. We keep looking and looking and here and there. And then if you just stop for a minute and say, okay, God, where is it? Just the stopping, first of all, you'll hear his voice. And very often, you decide to go back to somewhere you've already looked, and there it is. So nothing is lost in divine love.
I mean, that's an example of, you know, the first impulse is fear. You roll up into that little ball, and then you can't even think correctly. But if you don't and say, no, God's in control, I'll find it, your peace comes, and the answer comes. Thank you. Or, you know, you'll get a physical symptom and the same thing. Oh, my gosh, what's that? Oh, well, you start thinking all these things. You roll up into that little gray ball. And no, peace, be still. What is God saying? God is saying you're fearfully and wonderfully made, because that's how I created you, in my image and likeness. And this beautiful statement that was on our August 6th calendar, you do not have to listen to disease when it pretends to argue to you. It has no voice, no intelligence, no symptoms, no presence, no existence. Peter V. Roth. Who else is trying to speak?
It's me. That has happened to me. I've gotten the thought to go to a store, and pulling into the parking lot, it's full, and I'll get an idea to go down an aisle, even though there's all cars in it. And as I go down the aisle, a car will be backing out, and I'll get a parking spot. And that's listening to God, because He provides all our needs, even a parking spot.
Thank you. Yes. I think I'll have Gary now. He'll read the first paragraph of what Parthens wrote on the forum, which was the dangers of embracing sense after experiencing soul.
And this refers to the story of Jonah. It's from the Notes of the Field column of June 1894 issue of the Christian Science Journal on the dangers of embracing sense after experiencing soul. Dear Journal, I cannot help but see how graphically you described my own experience in the article relating to the prophet Jonah. It seems to me to be my literal experience. About 3 years ago, Christian Science was first introduced to my notice, with the result that I obtained a copy of Science and Health, and through studying it was healed and was enabled to heal others. But as seems often to be the case, when truth is first brought to those who do not understand it, I was treated by many of my former associates with coldness and scorn, and often by ridicule and contempt. From this experience arose the Jonah thought, which brought with it, as usual, a very sharp lesson. It is often the case that when a raw recruit is placed in the front of battle, fear produces a panic, and he turns and flees, as he supposes, for safety, only most often to find himself captured by the enemy. I went to New York and paid my fare to Liverpool, and for a time I was fairly self-mesmerized into the belief of a false security. Both the Bible and Science and Health were snugly stowed away, and I dreamed the hours away until one morning I stood on the Alexandria dock at Liverpool, which appeared to my blind sense to be a very solid and substantial masonry. I fancied that I had had a pleasant voyage, but alas, it was only a delusion. I have since learned that I was only thrown overboard. I was on the ocean of mortal belief, with all its accompanying wreckage and disaster.
Any comments on that?
Well, and he goes on to say that he realized he was in a mental hell.
And you see, this is where, when you have found this truth, you've discovered it, you have to stand strong. Because what originally seemed to have taken him off, what was it?
The opposition?
Yes.
What he was doing?
Yeah. Family and friends scorning him, saying, oh, you know, you're stupid. Why are you so involved with this? Whatever else people will tell you. I would imagine most of you have stories by now of this sort of thing. So does that mean you're just going to back off, or are you going to stand strong with the truth and handle the opposition? That was on my testimony Wednesday, how Nehemiah did it, the readings. He wouldn't come down from the wall. He set his face like a flint. And this is going from sense to soul. Because if you run backwards out of fear, you'll end up having to retrace your steps in what?
In tears.
Yes.
Right. You will be captured by the enemy.
You know, and as a practitioner, and I'm sure Florence will say this too, it's very difficult at times when I can I can see things and see what will happen to people when they stray. It's in the lesson also this week. It's hard not to speak out and with a warning, sometimes not listened to, but in citation 9, Mrs. Eddy says, through false estimates of soul is dwelling in sense and of mind is dwelling in matter, belief strays into a sense of temporary loss or absence of soul, spiritual truth. This state of error is the mortal dream of life and substance as existent in matter and is directly opposite to the immortal reality of being. So long as we believe that soul can sin or immortal soul is immortal body, we can never understand the science of being. So you see the straying. Sometimes it comes suddenly, you'll make a big jump, get out. Sometimes it comes slowly, a little bit here, a little bit there. You're not so interested in reading the lesson. You're just, you know, you've got family ties, obligations you've got to do. So you kind of skip watches, skip whatever. And pretty soon, there you are, drifting farther out. And soon you'll find yourself in the Adam dream again, unless you...
Till something wakes you up.
Mm-hmm. I know it because I've done it. I remember doing it often until finally I got so tired of crawling back in tears that I did decide I was going to set my face like a flint and not go backwards. And believe me, I had many challenges to try to get me to go backwards, but I made my covenant with God that I would go forward, not for any human personality, not because anybody was telling me or my practitioner wanted me to or my husband or my aunt Joanne, but because God wanted me, my whole heart, mind, soul, and I was going to give it all to Him. That's when you're on safe ground, but God, and for no other reason.
What did Jesus mean when he said, take up your cross and follow me? Not in this week's lesson, but it just came to me.
Make God your all, no matter what.
Yeah, to take up your cross, as Eddie talks about, doesn't she?
Yes.
Whatever
error throws at you, go forward.
Yeah, once you catch a glimpse of the truth, you're on solid ground. And if you remove yourself from that solid ground, it's very dangerous. But when you do stay on solid ground, the errors around you are going to do everything they can to get you off the solid ground. It's going to happen. So you're going to feel the persecution. You're going to feel, you know, the resistance of error. And that is taking up the cross. Stand no matter what error throws at you.
And also along with that, sorry.
No, go ahead, Michael.
Oh, just somebody once told me about, you know, Jesus talks about the straight and narrow path. And that straight and narrow path is the shortest distance between two locations. It's the most efficient way, is straight and narrow. And if you stray from that, that's when the sidetracking and the delays in whatever you're trying to achieve. And so straight and narrow is the only real way to go.
Thank you. Very true. And that is, you know, part of the definition of straying, getting off the path. So thank you. Yes, but keep on that path from sense to soul. Keep on it. And even when you think you're not making the progress, we've talked about that before. Think you're not making the progress. Mrs. Eddy says, if you're working on it the best you can, you are making progress. So, Florence, what did you want to say about that?
No, I found something this week from those materials that was sent to me, and it said stand. It's a very, you know, I'll send it for posting at some point, but it's talking about we must stand without wavering. And to help us do that, to always remember that we are in His presence and be still and know that I am God. And also the fact that we are told we were given peace. Peace be still. So those things are very important for us to remember. It's like get an attitude of who you are. I am God's child. I am the King's daughter. I'm the King's son. What, when we know this truth that of our true identity, we must revere it in such or be cherish it in such a way that it's so precious to us, and we defend it then with all the truths that we are learning. I think it's just, it was a beautiful thing.
Yes. So true. You have to cherish it. Otherwise, the harsh noises of the day would take it away. It beckons you to come down, just as it did with Nehemiah, to come down from that wall and be distracted, talk to the era, get people to take you off, and you can't do it. You must defend it. And remember, in making progress, I was once told to make a list every day of the progress I was making when I thought I was making no progress. And it was very hard for me until I realized, you know, I was waiting for some wonderful physical healing. But I had to see that any time I rebuked a thought, an erroneous thought, corrected things in my own thought, perhaps with someone else as well, all the times I was expressing more joy, more love, all the times I was meeting my demons, so to speak, I was making progress. Whether that physical thing had gone yet or not, I was making progress. And I didn't realize this. But once I started writing a list of everything, I really was making a lot of progress. And also, I worked harder on it to make sure I could say that at the end of the day. Yes, I've made progress. And eventually, the physical thing left because it was never true in the first place. But in the meantime, I was building up a greater sense of who I was as God's child, as Lawrence was mentioning, and also a greater understanding of who and what God is. That is always greatest progress we could ever make.
Thank you for that, because it really is important to know that we are making progress, because the noises of the day, the suggestions that have been coming to me are that, you know, you're really not, and I know where that is coming from, but sometimes it is difficult to rise above it. However, I have learned from this church that I won't stop. Even if I don't think I'm making progress, I will not stop my watches. I will not stop my lesson. I will not stop attending activities and services. So take that.
take that error. And that's how you have to take it. You know, Mrs. Evans was a wonderful example, and she would say, even if I have to crawl up the steps of the church, I will get there. I will be there. I will do my duty to God, to our leader, and to mankind. And right now, you know, at this stage, churches seem to be important. I know there's things Mrs. Eddy writes about when you outgrow churches and or organization. She says organization, not churches. Maybe there's a big difference, because we're not an organization. I don't believe that to be true. We're a church, as in the definition that was given in our watch last night, Mrs. Eddy's definition in the glossary. And if we're not, then we shouldn't exist. Oh yeah, Gary will read that. I will read. Church, the structure of truth and love, whatever rests upon and proceeds from divine principle. The church is that institution which affords proof of its utility and is found elevating the race, rousing the dormant understanding from material beliefs to the apprehension of spiritual ideas, and the demonstration of divine science thereby casting out devils or error and healing the sick. That is church, and I do not want to see that sense of church ever closing.
You know, I've certainly found that to be true here. When I first came here, I was rolled up like that spider. And then I was brought into this and given work to do. But was from the very beginning, I was very surprised at the freedom I had to do the work. Oh, as God was guiding me. And it's been wonderful. Did not this ring of people tell me to do, you know? And I just find that really, really inspiring. Just to listen, doing it. We hear it every Wednesday with meeting.
It is. Thank you very much. No, you're all demonstrating your posts. And that takes turning to God. You're not asking anybody, how do I write a lesson, or how do I write a Wednesday meeting, or how do I operate the website, or, I mean, everyone's given that freedom to demonstrate this truth. It has to be that way. God forbid it ever become anything else. So, and along with that then, this goes along with that. And this is something that we had in our boxes, which Linda found for us. And all of you are familiar with Reverend Kratzer. He wrote Dominion Within. He wrote Revelation Interpreted. He was highly praised by Mrs. Eddy. But this is just a little of his account with the BOD. In December 1912, I applied for membership in the First Church of Christ Scientists of Chicago, where I'd been attending services for 3 years. In my examination before the board of said church, I was asked the following question. Did I use manuscripts on Christian Science written by myself in my practice? Did I attempt to explain passages in the Bible and in Science and Health to my patients? Did I teach in connection with my practice, and did I charge for the time spent in teaching? Did I revise manuscripts for books involving the discussion of Christian Science? All of these questions I replied in the affirmative. I further expressed my intention to continue to do so, in whatever way the Spirit of God should seem to lead me. I did not say these things defiantly and talked in the most loving and conciliatory manner, but nevertheless took my stand firmly for my right as an American citizen and as a citizen of the Kingdom of God to deal with my own patients in whatever manner it seemed to me would be best to promote their recovery. The board of the First Church did not recommend my name to the church for membership. And then he goes on. In February, he receives a letter from the CSBOD in Boston, starting with the same letter that we got, form letter. Dear Mr. Kratzer, from time to time, information has reached the office of the Mother Church, blah, da, 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 da. So anyway, it goes on with several pages of how he was standing up for his right, as he said, as a citizen of the United States, certainly as a Christian Scientist, to do as he felt inspired to do. And so he was excommunicated as well. And many of you know the book that he wrote. Well, it wasn't authorized. So that's how he got into trouble. How could it be authorized? Mrs. Eddy had passed on. And besides that, she never talked about authorized literature. So that is the organization that people must outgrow and should outgrow, because that is limiting. It's not of God. But that is not the definition of church as given in the glossary. From sense to soul.
Your pathway lies before you.
Yes. Yes, thank you. So,
Mrs. Eddy did say not to use authorized literature.
She did. She did. We quoted that a few weeks ago.
Yes.
That was in the Smiley book. No, in the Hartsook letters. The Hartsook letters. So she definitely did say that. And yet in many of the books, you'll see authorized by the CSCOD in the beginning pages. So all of this is the beginning of sense, not of soul, of the human mind, not of the divine mind.
Whenever you see authorized literature, it's important, I find it's important to realize that the stuff that's authorized has been authorized by the human mind. So why would you ever want to trust the human?
Well, but you can't actually, I mean, science and health and all of that is divinely authorized. And they have no right to think that they give it authorization. It's divinely authorized, and they're the only, and God is the only one who authorizes anything. And you should know from how you feel what is right and what is wrong. And that's true about anything in this church, too. You should know for yourself what is right and what is wrong, and judge righteous judgment. Let your spiritual sense guide you. Now, in the two stories we have Jacob and Saul to Paul, and they had to wrestle, didn't they? It did.
Yes.
So did Saul. And what were they wrestling with?
The wrong thoughts that would be.
Go ahead, Florence.
The wrong sense of self.
Right. Material sense, material senses, this false sense of soul. He had to wrestle with it. Mrs. Eddy says that Jacob was alone, wrestling with error, struggling with a mortal sense of life, substance, and intelligence as existence in matter, as existent in matter, with its false pleasures and pain. And this is what we must do. And sometimes it's not just a one-night thing. Sometimes it's a many of a night. I still am going through it. When an angel, a message from truth and love appeared to him and smote the sinews or strength of his error till he saw its unreality. And he wouldn't let it go until his nature was transformed. And this is what we do as well. We struggle until our nature is transformed. And of course, he did it, you know, it was this one night thing, and there was a big change in him, but he had to keep doing it. I think everyone does, as long as you're on this earth. This false sense of life and matter. And then?
And in Jacob's case, it kind of came to him as a false sense of family.
Right.
His brother, you know, which he had to overcome.
Yeah, it was a personal sense of his family.
And in Saul's case, I think it was a false sense of, you know, human education. He'd been so highly educated, Pharisee of the Pharisees. And he thought that that was the highest right that God had for him. And it persecuted the Christians. That's why he had to wrestle with it and get over it. She did.
And also, and Shardy spoke to this on the forum, when the sick or the sinning, this is number 4 in Science and Health, awake to realize their need of what they have not, they will be receptive of divine science, which gravitates towards soul and away from material sense, removes thought from the body, and elevates even mortal mind to the contemplation of something better than disease or sin. So, again, when you sick or sinning, you have to awaken to the need of what you don't have. And that's why sometimes our awakening process can seem very severe. Maybe we're, you know, in terrible pain, or maybe we're just, you know, sinning thinning, and everything's going wrong. But only in that way will you be what?
Restored.
Be restored to you.
Yes, restored. And the word Mrs. Eddy uses in this is receptive. You have to be at that point of receptivity. And sometimes that takes a lot.
Young children are naturally very receptive to the truth. That's why it's important that our children attend a good Sunday school as early as possible.
But also, Mary, what you said about the awakening seems so severe because it's most important, because in the end, we're not really fighting something, but the awakening to know that it's nothing. And that awakening, that's why it takes so much, and it's okay. Because until we are awake, we don't see, you know, even if we say we are fighting, what are we fighting? It's nothing there to fight in truth. But if we are not awake to it, then, you know, that's why the awakening is so keenly important.
Absolutely. And it always is an awakening. Always remember it's awakening. You're not really fighting something real. You're awakening to what is unreal and seeing what is real. That is from, again, that's sense soul. So these great patriarchs did this. And the way it's described in the lesson is just beautifully done. Very order and everything. It just shows the process. It's very important that we understand this. So when these things come to us, we know they only come to bless us. And I'm talking about the hard experiences. They only come to bless. If you turn to God with your whole heart, mind, and soul, it will come to bless you. Don't be discouraged if it's not overnight. I wanted to read something. This always meant a great deal to me. And it's been one of the precepts for, and it's something that Linda found for me, which I was very grateful for, because I remembered it. And it's a very, 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 very important point. Carpenter says, whatever Mrs. Eddy said or did by way of treating people in a kindly way was not because she was a good woman, moral, unselfish, and sweet-tempered, but because she had demonstrated God's government to such an extent that it had become second nature. Whatever God required her to do, she had to do. To think of Mrs. Eddy as doing good because it was an inherent human instinct was not the right conception of her. In Christian Science, students should not express unselfishness and share with others just because they believe they have loving natures of themselves, but because they are governed by God. To be sure, they should always act in a way that will call forth human commendation and regard, but they should do it wholly as Mrs. Eddy did. She made a law for herself that she could not help being kind because she was governed by a kind God. Christian Science does not merely engender the development of human virtues. It requires one to reflect God. Mrs. Eddy claimed no self-derived virtue. She did not express love from a human motivation of unselfishness and kindness, but from the basis of obedience to God. She did what he told her to do. So, when he told her to be stern, she had to be stern, no matter how much she would have wished otherwise. In her famous class of 1898, she was asked if scientists ought to reprove error in others, or if the realization of love would destroy it without an audible rebuke. She answered, "One of the hardest things I have had to do was to deal with this very question. I would rather at any time dwell on love alone and get away from error, but that would not do. It would allow error to increase." Jesus rebuked sharply, "I must do so until I arrive at that place in mind where I cannot see error, where God, Spirit is all in all." From sense to soul. We know in the Bible where Jesus was called good, and what did he say?
Not
our good, but God.
Yes. This is such an important point because, and when I read it, I was trying to be a good Christian Scientist. That's why it struck me so. There's no such thing. You are only good as a reflection of God. And you should be good, but only because you reflect him. And if he tells you to be stern or to be something else, you have to do that too. You have to be completely willing. What's the word when you're in pottery? It's you can
malleable.
Be shaped.
Malleable?
Yes, thank you. Malleable. Totally willing to be molded.
Like Florence's definition.
Yes. Florence's definition of meek, which is?
To be liquid.
Yeah.
Yeah. To be molded in whatever shape you lies before you.
Yes. Yes. So, and this is keeping your slate clean, because if you're holding thoughts of hatred and resentment and what happened yesterday and you're so mad at so-and-so, God can't mold you. And you certainly can't reflect the good that he is, the kindness that he is. You might go forth and try to do something good in a human way, but that's not it. That's not what we're talking about here. It's something divine. And you know when you're with people that express that. And sometimes you don't like to be with those people because they'll know the errors that you might be trying to hide. But this is a very important point as we learn to be, as the lesson ends with, this expression of soul, because you are the expression of soul. And to me, soul is all the beauty, the joy, all the lovely qualities God is. So I thank Linda for finding that, and we will have it in our next magazine, Love is the Liberator, on unselfed love. But it is certainly part of being that expression of soul. Bell is ringing. So this lesson also, if you haven't read it recently, you should all study Mrs. Eddy's Pond and Purpose, Miscellaneous Writing, starting on page 203. And I think I will have Gary end with it. And just to remember the three baptisms, baptism of repentance, the baptism of the Holy Ghost, and the baptism of Spirit. It is a wonderful article. And again, it is how, if you wonder how to get from sense to soul, study this and apply it. I will read the ending for us.
Growth is governed by intelligence, by the active, all-wise, law-creating, law-disciplining, law-abiding principle, God. The real Christian Scientist is constantly accentuating harmony in word and deed, mentally and orally, perpetually repeating this diapason of heaven, quote, "Good is my God, and my God is good. Love is my God, and my God is love," end quote. Beloved students, you have entered the path. Press patiently on. God is good, and good is the reward of all who diligently seek God. Your growth will be rapid if you love good supremely and understand and obey the way-shower, who, going before you, has scaled the steep ascent of Christian Science, stands upon the Mount of Holiness, the dwelling place of our God, and bathes in the baptismal font of eternal love. As you journey, and betimes sigh for rest beside the still waters, ponder this lesson of love. Learn its purpose, and in hope and faith, where heart meets heart reciprocally blessed, drink with me the living waters of the spirit of my life purpose, to impress humanity with the genuine recognition of practical, operative Christian Science.
Thank you all for joining our roundtable this morning.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.